The True False podcast is made possible with the support of the University of Missouri and the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute.
Welcome to the True False Film Festival.
In a documentary, there is a feeling of truth when you see somebody doing an interview. But you have no real guarantees, right? Especially if they're thinking of something that happened a while back.
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, we're bringing you a conversation between Philippe Barbosa, director of Gabriel and the Mountain, and Matt Holzman, host of KCRW's The Document. Philippe's film was created from a tragedy, the death of his friend, Gabriel. In Gabriel and the Mountain, he weaves together scripted dialogue and encounters with real people who met Gabriel to craft a story about his friend's last 70 days. Philippe and Matt's conversation was a field session called Reconstruct at this year's True False. Here's Matt.
When you have interviews with the people he encountered, you see their faces, but it's not the interview. It's not like them talking. It's just you see their faces and then you hear their interviews. So it's almost like you were trying to stay away from the tropes of an actual documentary.
I actually shot the interviews on camera, most of them, not all of them. But since the script, it was planned to be like that. You know, I had used their statements, the informal interviews I had conducted during research, and I had written them in as voiceovers. It just came to me like that, you know. But how I would represent those voiceovers on screen, that was a question until I figured out with Alex, with the first character. I gave him the strongest close-up we had so far in the film. And they all have the strongest close-up. Gabriel is always seen from a little bit more distance.
Right.
And it's like they are what we are seeing Gabriel through their eyes almost. And I just ask Alex, think of Gabriel and think of how much you miss him and just send your good energies to him, you know. Just think about him. And I wrote camera and everybody was very moved at the end of that take of silence, you know. And then I realized, okay, with each character, we're gonna try to find a moment within a scene to give that close up for the interview to kick in, you know. So I mapped out all the characters where that would happen, and I did it for all of them. But during the editing, I played around a little bit with the real interviews on camera. But I don't know why I chose this way. You know, I think it's because I was really interested in conjugating the past and the present tenses in one frame, you know, in
right.
audiovisual frame. So there you have present, which is his face, thinking about Gabriel in the past, and then the recollection, you know, which is the past itself. And I think the entire film plays with that. And because there's a distance between the present and the past, it's 7 years later that I shot the film, there are going to be holes, right? And there are going to be holes. They're going to be fragments, and they're going to be
holes
and yeah. doubts of whether, and I try to give some evidence to the audience that this is not a very reliable narrator because it's recollections of people, you know, and sometimes there are contradictions that are impossible within the scene, like with Louis, you know, the guides that in his recollection, his voice all over, during the scene, he says that Gabriel paid him only half, right? Because he let him go in the middle of the day. And that was Gabriel's great scene, maybe, you know, from the story, from what I knew of the story. He says, well, he only paid me half, which is not enough. And yet, in the action, we see the opposite. Gabriel gives him the money. He says, you want the change? And he says, no, you can keep the change.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So that's the actor defending the character in the present moment. You know, it was him. It was a documentary.
Right.
It was him, I think, pretty much taken by this character and leaving the reality of the moment, you know?
That's what's so funny. It's like, I think, so When something's a documentary, I think the assumption is it's like journalism. It's true,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And when it's a fiction film, it's not true, right? And the reality is that our lives are filled with memory and inconsistencies. And so in some ways, your fiction film is truer. In this one scene, he's negotiating with a guy to go up to this mountain, and he's just going to pay him off, and he's going to go on his own. And in the voiceover, basically, it says he only paid him half. In the action, he clearly has paid him even more than he was owed. And so that's kind of the problem with some documentaries, which they have to decide which they believe is true, when the truth is, or the truth is the wrong word, when the reality is, life is like that. It's this mixed recollection. So it's just weird that in some ways this fiction film is truer than had you done a documentary.
Yes, because in a documentary there's a status of truth, right? So, or the feeling of truth. When you see somebody doing an interview, you just assume that that's the truth.
That's
but,
right.
But you have no real guarantees, right? Especially if they're thinking of something that happened a while back.
So let me ask you this. So I'm assuming that you never thought of making a documentary about
Gabriel's
story.
And the reason why I haven't is because I wanted the film to bring him to life.
Right.
And if I made a documentary, it would be always in the past tense, so he would be always dead. I wanted to create the illusion that he was alive again, you know, through cinema.
There is a great story about your search for what happened to him that is fascinating. I mean, I'm really, like, I truly love the movie. I was sad when it was over because I missed the people and I missed the places. Like, I wanted to go back there. But I was really, really curious about, so in this search for the people who he encountered on this trip, you found some of them and you told them about what happened to them because they didn't know.
Yeah.
And so that to me is a really fascinating story. Like, I want to hear about how you found the people. How did you tell them what happened? And what was the effect on their lives? Because one of the central themes of this movie is he is a Caucasian person who goes to Africa and does what a lot of white people do, which is like, I'm not a tourist. I'm like one of them, and we're friends, and they made me a Maasai, and I ate some of the rabbit, and so I'm wearing the kente cloth and whatever. And I'd love to hear from their point of view how they viewed him. So there's a whole, I mean, there's like 10 stories below his story. The other stories of his story, maybe. And I would love to do that because I just think it's fascinating. And
and
I know you shot some stuff, you know, like for instance, when you met some of the, when you discovered some of these people and you re-met them, when you talked to them, were you filming it?
I was not, I mean, just a little bit, you know, to put together some kind of preparation material for myself, but never with the intention of turning that into a documentary piece. I thought, and I mean, there was a guy who really wanted to come along to make a documentary about the shooting, you know, and like a making of. And I really resisted that idea. I knew like it could be an amazing piece, maybe even better than the film. Really, like, I think the stories behind the making of this film, they are better than the film. They're more emotional, you know, they're more cathartic, like meeting the people, telling them the news, you know, how I found them. Like, it could be a beautiful film, but I thought that, I mean, it would be harmful for our process. I mean, first of all, like, we had a truck with 16 seats, so everybody from the crew, like, was doubling up for another.
Right.
Like, everybody was very essential. Like, everybody was doing so much, and everybody was getting the same salary and having the same voice. It was a very socialistic film like that. So I didn't want to have somebody who was doing something not for this film, you know, for something else.
Right.
And I was also a bit resistant to the idea, like, of having, because if you have somebody with a camera shooting every step of the way, like, inevitably this person is gonna want something bad to happen, right? Like, inevitably, like, this person is gonna, like, deep down he or she is gonna need a major conflict within the shooting story.
Coming up after the break, Matt and Philippe talk editing.
Most of the things that we are watching, it's cut. You don't see the shot, you don't see the mise-en-scène, you don't see the form.
First, a word from our sponsors. Hey, listeners, it's Allison, letting you know that this episode of the True False Podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. That's also where we produce this show, here at the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is famous for the Missouri Method. So we've got Catherine Wheeler here in the studio. Catherine's a graduate student at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and she is a producer on our podcast for True False. Hey, Catherine.
Hi.
Thank you for producing this episode.
It's a joy.
And I was hoping you could tell us what you mean, or we say, Missouri Method.
Well, with the J School, we're kind of getting thrown into the deep end right away. I don't know any other place where on my first day of class, I was writing feature stories for the local newspaper, and I'm working at the local NPR affiliate doing stories. There are just so many options to really get professional experience even before we go out into our professional careers.
Yeah, the experience stuff is really what stands out, I think.
Yeah.
The True False Podcast is made possible by the University of Missouri. This episode of the True False Podcast is brought to you by the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute. Here to tell us more is the RJI Executive Director, Randy Picht. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Allison.
Can you tell us what are the RJI Fellowships?
They're a great opportunity for folks in the industry that have big ideas or innovative ideas that they want to try to bring to journalism. And they're a great way for RJI to work on its mission of helping journalism have a long and bright future. Our fellows work on innovative projects that could involve new strategies for the industry, and not necessarily just from journalism. We're always very interested in interdisciplinary projects. We've worked with artists, technologists, entrepreneurs, along with folks from the New York Times and the Washington Post. If it's a good idea that we think can help journalism, sign us up.
That sounds awesome, especially the interdisciplinary part. Are there any projects that you've gotten to witness that you're really excited about?
We did one with an artist that tried to create a piece that could run in the paper that people could take home and frame. It was about gun control. A lot of the interdisciplinary projects get involved with engagement.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
We like to think that RJI offers the most flexible journalism fellowships around.
Very Midwestern of us.
That's right.
The True False Podcast is sponsored by the Reynolds Journalism Institute. You can find out more at rjionline.org. That's rjionline.org. Welcome back to the True False Podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeldt. Let's get back to the conversation between Philippe Barbosa and Matt Holzman. Philippe's film, Gabriel and the Mountain, combines fiction and nonfiction to reconstruct the end of his friend's life.
But when I set out to make a movie, form is just as important for me as the story.
Right.
And it's actually not my education. You know, I went to Columbia, which was very story-oriented all the time, but it's like as I really...
Columbia,
university,
Columbia,
yeah.
Not Columbia, Missouri, just to be clear.
It's almost the same. And but yeah, I mean, the when I set out to make movies, I wanted to be cinema, you know. I wanted to deserve the big screen. So form for me, it's so important. Form is language. It's grammar. It's how you compose your sentences, and I feel that. And every film I make, in a way, it's a formal piece of resistance too, you know, it's as far as time goes, you know, because we have arrived at a point that we are so used to having shots of 3 seconds, you know, the last 3-4 seconds, that we don't even realize that anymore. Most people, they don't realize. It's like they watch... most of the things that we are watching, it's cut. You don't see the shot, you don't see the mise-en-scène, you don't see the form, you know. It's just basically, let's get coverage, and then we figure out in the editing room, you know. And I don't want to ever work like that.
It's interesting because one of the things that I want to do with my podcast is allow the... I mean, this is one of the things that I was thinking as I was watching your movie. I was like, I know that your paint, you know, like they talk about with a painting, can you see the artist's hand? right? Can you see their brushstrokes? And I was trying to see your documentarian brushstrokes, right? So where you can see them at work, because it reminds you, to get back to what we talked about before, that it's not a fact. It's a construction, right? It's a movie. I heard the most amazing thing the other day, which I never heard before, and I'm sure everyone has heard this, but when talking about cinema, that every edit is a lie.
Mm.
And obviously that's overstating the case. Every edit is a choice, but it's just a reminder that a movie is a construction. And especially in documentaries, it's really easy to forget that, because we think it's fact, you know, and it's not fact. And back to what we were talking about before, it's funny that sometimes fiction films have fact. There's a truth to them that's factual in a way. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that sometimes the cut, you said the cut is what?
Every edit is a lie.
It's a lie. But sometimes it can create truths as well, right? It's
right.
But that's where I'm coming from. And there's a very wonderful documentary here that I watched in Cannes. It's called Makala. Mm-hmm. The shots are so long. It's like really about duration there, you know, like he just really trusts the image. And the director who's here, he's the shooter. He shot it himself. Amazing ZP, very talented guy, Emmanuel. And I mean, you just see the trust that he has on the language of cinema, you know, mm-hmm. like of how he insists on that image, and then the image, it just keeps on multiplying itself, you know. And I do feel much more trust for a director when he's cutting less. Much more trust, like as an audience member.
That's interesting.
I feel much more confident. I say, okay, this person, like, he has planned the shot, he's like,
it's less of a construction.
It's less of a construction. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, because you just see things unfolding in real time, and you just trust. You have more.
But you know, the quick editing has a wonderful place. But it's just interesting that that's become like the default. And it is nice to see an extended shot, because you really can see this is what is happening. This is where we are.
This is where we are. Exactly. Yeah.
That's really interesting. It's almost like it's a better. It's almost like a. I had to say it. It's almost like the long shot is a more sturdy construction in a way. I mean, it's still a construction, right? Because it still has edits.
And you have to edit within, right? The editing takes place within the shot.
How you're shooting it, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, you're editing as you shoot, because the elements, they have to be working, all the elements. And I mean, you don't have coverage, so you. I mean, every take. I mean, in a fiction film like this, when you're actually staging scenes, right? That's why I say fiction. We were just repeating takes until the time felt right, you know. But it is editing within the shots, because a long take it can have many scales, right? It can have a close up, it can have a long shot, you can pan and you change the scale completely, and it's already another shot. So. Mm-hmm. So within one shot, you can have many scales of shots. You know, you can actually have an edit list within a shot.
It's kind of funny, because I'm totally contradicting myself. I'm agreeing with you, but it's like I was saying, oh, gee, fly on the wall is not necessarily more true. And here we are saying these longer shots can have more truth to them. But this is no orthodoxy. That's the kind of
there's point. No yeah there's no rule. And also, like, the fly on the wall doesn't necessarily mean longer,
a long shot.
Yeah, because
that's
mean they're shooting long takes on the set, but or on the spot, but in the edits they can just break it, you know.
That's
very
true.
Often.
That's true.
But the cinema verite approach, I think, requires the presence of the filmmaker, requires the feeling of the paintbrush, requires the interaction between who's behind the camera, who's in front of the camera.
And are you? I know for me, my work, my whole life, I. The only time I'm happy with it, no matter how people react, is when I feel like I did something that I'm satisfied with. And like then how people react to it, or how...
Doesn't matter.
Well, come on, of course it matters.
It matters.
But of course you want everyone to love you, but and, you know, think you're awesome. But I mean, there's times when I've done stuff and I'm just like, yep, that was my vision for it. I implemented it successfully. I'm very proud of that. Because the other thing, if you don't think the work is good and everyone loves it, you just think, oh, you're a fraud. They don't get it.
Yeah, but I mean, I can be very happy with the work, and I can be very proud of the work. And yet, if I read a very violent and nasty review, I can be sad for like 2 weeks, you know, like just how I am. I mean, the success is to really be happy with what you've done. And even though I've had many great things going on for this film, I can admit that I was not necessarily happy. So
you're not happy with it?
Like, I'm not saying that I'm not happy with the film. I'm saying that at some stages in the process of making this movie, I was not necessarily happy. I was very happy doing the research of this movie, but when I was making it, I was very anxious. And the whole trick was to try to pass to the non-actors, to the actors, to the African actors, that I was very calm. That was a challenge, you know, to give them a sense of tranquility when I was actually very concerned, because, I mean, I was putting my crew through a lot of risks, going up Kilimanjaro with a crew of, nobody was a mountaineer in the crew, my DP is asthmatic. And we're going through very dangerous roads, you know, we did 6,000 kilometers in 72 days in Africa, so, I mean, it's not evidence. And I remember like the relief I felt when I landed in Rio and how much I cried, and thank God everybody's safe. But I look at this work and I feel that it was very big what we did, you know, like as a spiritual work. That we really somehow helped Gabriel make his passage.
I hope a lot of documentary filmmakers will see it and say it's a good thought experiment about the truth, you know, on screen. So congratulations.
Thank you.
It was fun to talk to you.
You too.
That's all for this episode of the True False podcast. You can find more of our conversations about nonfiction filmmaking at kbia.org, in iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, leave us a review. That'll help more people find the show. Thank you to Philippe Barbosa and Matt Holzman for the conversation. This episode was produced by Aviva Okeson-Haberman and edited by Ryan Vermeulener and Bram Sablesmith. The song you heard was Marissa Anderson's Into the Light. Our introduction was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds from the True False Film Fest. Join us next time as we discuss a new aspect of the art and craft of nonfiction film. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.